I speak to Mehmet Bayram, a retired IT professional and contributor to Sendika.org, a Turkish language leftist news site. Bayram has lived for many years in the United States, but travels frequently to Turkey for extended periods. We discuss historical and contemporary Turkish society, including the implications of being a member of NATO, working class and minority struggles against reactionary and fascistic Turkish nationalism, and the 1923 founding of the Republic of Turkey by General and later President for Life Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. This followed the Armenian Genocide, the Ottoman defeat in World War I, and the final disintegration of the empire. The segment ends musically with a singing of the International in Turkish.
Mehmet Bayram is a retired IT professional and writer, producer, and translator for the revolutionary site Sendika.org in Turkey. He has lived in the U.S. for decades, but travels frequently back to Turkey, his country of origin. Mehmet, thank you for speaking with me today. I must also welcome you back to Pacifica Radio and Capitalism, Race, and Democracy.
Thank you so much, Thomas, for giving me the time and for looking into this issue that's going on in Middle East and Turkey, most of all.
It does seem to be one of the neglected countries of late. But before we get into political issues in Turkey and geopolitical ones of the region, please give our listeners an overview of the present-day Republic of Turkey's economy and social demographics, i.e. Key occupations, industries, and economic activities of the Turkish working class and peasantry, as well as its social, religious, and national groupings.
Yeah, well, Turkey today, foremost, we have to say that it's a NATO country. So it is dependent on imperialism. It has been done that way. And it has a population of like nearly 86 million people. And but from this 86 million people, we can say that 32 million is on payroll or wages. But when you put in the unemployed as well, that becomes like 35 million people. That is the working class. The unemployment is around 13 million. That's quite high. But remember that these are the figures that are given by the Turkish government, and so very, very unreliable. We'll come to that in a moment. But even giving those, we have to look at the three confederations, working class confederations, that dominate the organizational side of the working class. Now, number one is Turkish. Then it is Hak-İş. And then it is DISK. These are very important confederations in unionizing. Now, there are 17 million people who are eligible for union organizing, but come to look at it, only 2.5 million workers are organized. And that is also
what industries are they concentrated in?
They are mostly concentrated on service manufacturing and service industries and government. So when you look at this, the importance of these confederations come up. But let's start with Turkish. It is a what in Turkey we call the Yellow Union, which means they are sold out. Turkish was established in Turkey, but none other by AFL-CIO. When Turkey was developing in 1950s and, trying with so-called bourgeois democracy, United States sent AFL-CIO to establish and model the new emerging confederations and unions to look like and be like the United States unions, business unions, and the government-controlled unions.
So this is the early 50s, yes?
That is correct. That is
So
correct.
obviously, anti-communism was in the forefront of the minds of the labor bureaucrats from the AFL-CIO, just as they had
Exactly.
been in active in post-war Europe, trying to split unions from away from communist leadership towards the so-called the Christian Democrats, depending on the country.
Exactly. That was the point. Is that when and if the Turkey was going to have labor unions, they better establish them. You know, the United States and Turkish government better establish it before the workers did, so that it was very controlled. There's a very famous saying by the president of Turkey one day. He said, "If we consider that communism would be best for this country, we would bring it first." So we would not let anybody in the working class to do anything. It is our task to do and control. So the Turkish was established that way, and it still is the most powerful union confederation in Turkey, and it has 32 unions under it. It's like an umbrella organization, and it has 1.27 million workers under its wings, which means that like about half of the working, the unions are controlled by Turkish. Now, the second one is Hak İş, and this is a completely and directly controlled and is in the ownership of the government. It is a religious, following the trend of the Turkish government, very religious organization, very pro-business, very pro-employer side, and they enjoy 828,000 workers underneath it. But let's not confuse ourselves, okay? These are not the workers who decided that Hak İş is their union. They are forced into this. Government forces them to go into it. Employers force them to go into it. There
Are
were
the are
many.
these mostly state employees?
No, not only the state employees, yes, they are, but also the private enterprise. There were many, many strikes. You see, in law, you can change your union if you want to, in Turkish constitutional law.
Yeah.
But the minute the workers decided that Hak İş was selling them out, every agreement they were selling them out, so they decided that en masse, that this is not the union, we are switching our union. Then the first thing they saw was the police force, the army force coming to the factories and beating the hell out of these workers, and the employers would be firing all of them, and so on and so forth. This happened everywhere in the country, so they are forced to stay and or to get into Hakish. Now, the most important to me is the other confederation, DISK. In words, what it means is that it's the Confederation of the Revolutionary Workers' Unions.
Could you
This was
spell those three confederations separately, starting with, is it Turkish, T-U-R?
Turkish, Turk-IS. Hak İş is Hak-IS, and this is DISK.
Okay.
Now, DISK was formed when the unions under Turkish in 1960s, early 60s, saw what Turkish was doing. It was a yellow union. So the most revolutionary part of this confederation split from Turkish and formed the Revolutionary Workers' Union Confederation. Now we have to understand what happened in 1960s to have this confederation established. It was in 1960s, for the first time, the left was kind of allowed to organize, although being organizations in communist and socialist organizations was illegal. It would cost you prison terms, as it had been since its conception in 1923.
The
Let's
parties
remember.
the parties were themselves illegal.
Well, yes, of course. You could not, it was a very famous law, Law 141 and 142, banned anybody from having communist propaganda, communist organizations, communist parties. They were completely banned with severe punishments.
Wow.
So for the 60s, they were still around, but now there was an emerging working class. Emerging, I'm saying, because Turkish structure, the structure of the country was changing from a peasant-based country to a capitalist-based. It was capitalist, but the economy was becoming more capitalistic, and this the people migrating from the countryside to the cities was forming the new working class. So together with that, the left started to organize them. When I say the left, they are all illegal, by the way. They are under the
Yeah.
underground, and
Yeah.
this disc was formed with that. And this showed itself in 1970 for the first time en masse, when there was a law being changed against the working class. And so they organized a general strike in Istanbul and surrounding areas. And this is the industrial heart of Turkey. Industry was there, Istanbul and the surrounding regions. So the entire region went on a general strike. The workers left their factories and started marching towards the city center, including the regions like 10 miles away. And those even who were not organized under this, who were not even unionized, shut down the factories, and they started marching towards Istanbul. And the police was not enough to stop them. The army had to come in, and even the army could not stop the workers from marching and taking over the Istanbul, the most industrious city, the heart of Turkey. And
This
the
is when
only
the summer of 1970, roughly, or
exactly, yes, June 15 and 16. And
okay.
the only way they could stop
I
it
mean,
was to
reminiscent
give.
of May of 68 in France,
Exactly.
in Italy in the autumn of 69. It was called the Hot Autumn. So
The
obviously,
hot, exactly,
labor
exactly.
unions across Europe.
And they could not. I mean, there are many pictures. You can find it. The workers are defeating the army with their bayonets and everything, with stones and bricks in their hands. The army was retreating from this. But so the only way that they could stop this from taking over Istanbul was by force. They brought the head of disk to the radios and TVs, and he had to beg the workers, please stop now. We've accomplished what we wanted. Let's be calm. Let's go back, and so on and so forth. So that's how, just to give you a history of this. But in 1980 coup, disk was shut down. All its properties were confiscated, and they have not been given back. And this again emerged after 1990s, but it is under tremendous pressure and will not do anything like it did before. So this is the confederation, three confederations that we're talking about.
Or national groupings. How much of this is spread is exclusively within the Turkish speaking people of the Republic versus the Kurds versus other minorities, Armenians, Greeks, whatever. And maybe you can talk a little bit about how the Republic has treated minorities since the fall of the empire to present day.
Well, it has not treated them very well, of course. The reason, first of all, is that we have to understand how Turkish Republic was formed. This is like the DNA of things to come. Turkish Republic was formed on a genocide, bloody genocide. Whatever you see in Turkey today is the result And the repercussions of that genocide that happened in 1915, the Armenian genocide. After that genocide, or during that, it was decided that a new country was going to be formed. Remember, we are still in the Ottoman Empire in 1950s, but the attacks, atrocities against minorities, Greeks, Armenians, and so on and so forth, was happening since 1890s, when the Ottoman Empire was about to fall anyway. Now, the new ideology that comes to this country is from Europe. It's a brand new thing. It's called nationalism, because Ottoman structure is not nationalist in that perspective. It has many, many ethnicities, many, many religions in that empire, and these are called millets. So they live along each other. There is a hierarchy, of course, and on top of the hierarchy are the Muslims. But the new ideology is not allowing this. They believe that the fall of empire is because of non-Muslims. They striked us in the back, they knifed us, and they were, they are treason, everything.
I mean,
So the
historians have argued that one of the geniuses of the Ottoman Empire was its tolerance of minorities. It taxed them but did not require military service, things like that. And that's how it lasted as long as it did, though one could argue it was at the same time rotting from within, as you're implying.
Exactly.
So this internationalism of the empire was superseded by a Turkish nationalism, you're saying?
That is correct. It was a change. Although Turkey did use minorities off and on in military operations when it needed. And the most important thing is that the taxation. They taxed them to heaven on earth. I mean, if Turks and Muslims were giving one tax per year, let's say, the non-Muslims were giving three, four extra taxes on top of it. So that way they were controlled. But with the new ideology of nationalism, but remember, this nationalism starts with Islam versus non-Islam. But during the Armenian genocide, it changes to its core of ethnic nationalism, Turkish. So the new establishment of the country, the new Turkish Republic, establishes with the goals of one leader, one flag, one religion, one ethnicity, one Führer, I'm sorry, one leader, and one language. So it means that all the rest was to go, and they
Well,
did.
Atatürk was often called the father, wasn't he? The father of
Yes, he is still being called the father, but remember the book written few about 10 years ago, comparing Hitler and Atatürk, and Hitler there praises Atatürk for everything, and he says, "Me and Mussolini, we are the students of Atatürk. Whatever we have learned from Atatürk." So that gives you a perspective of who Mustafa Kemal Atatürk was and the new republic that it established. So with this, you were asking about the minorities. First of all, there are no religious minorities that are left outside of Islam to be even considered, significant. But once the change of that nationalism from religious nationalism, because we have to say this, in the massacre and this genocide of the Kurds, the Assyrians, the Greeks, and everything, Kurds were together with the Turks participating in the genocide. Why? Because they were considered Muslim. They were considered within Islam as well. So we were all brothers, and everything was okay within us. But once the Republic was established, Kurds also understood that, hey, This was also against them because everything that was promised to them, nothing was given. And that's why we had many, many massacres of Kurds occurring after the Turkish Republic, because they kept on asking, you promised us. They were given, they could rule their own country. Even in the maps, it was written Kurdistan. Now try to do this in Turkey today, or even, you know, after, during Atatürk, and, you would be hanged. Okay. So this is the conditions that Turkey was established in. And so now the Kurds are from 19 to 25% of the population. And the problem is that they have no rights whatsoever. And they have been fighting for this because, first of all, Turkey for long years did not even recognize the word Kurd. I know I was raised even hearing the word Kurd, meant you had to look around. If anybody was around hearing you, you would go to prison. That word was illegal, banned, nothing. It was dirty. It was this, that. You could not pronounce it in family gatherings. You could not pronounce it to your friends.
So obviously no Kurdish is taught in schools. It's not recognized as a language. The people themselves are just deemed to be Turkish, right?
Exactly. Well, even the army propaganda brochures had to explain, because you have 25% of your population speaking Kurdish. How do you explain it? So they say, the official army propaganda says that there are no Kurds, but they are Turks, and they used to live on the mountains covered with snow. And in the snowy mountains, when you walk, your feet makes the sound Kurt, Kurt, Kurt. And that's why these Turks have been labeled Kurds. This is the official explanation of Kurds.
Did they use the term mountain Turks as well?
Oh, yes. Exactly.
Yeah, I've heard that. Turks. Yeah.
Yes.